A young man was walking through a supermarket to pick up a few things when he noticed an older lady following him around. And thinking nothing of it, he ignored her and continued on. And finally, he went to the checkout line and she cut right in front of him. "Pardon me," she said, "I'm sorry if my staring at you has made you feel uncomfortable. It's just that you look just like my son, who died recently." "Oh, I'm very sorry," replied the young man. Is there anything I can do for you?" "Yes," she said, as I'm leaving, can you say goodbye, mother? It would make me feel so much better." "You want me to say goodbye, mother, as you leave the checkout?" "Yeah, could you please? It would really mean a lot to me." "Sure," answered the young man. So as the old woman was leaving, he waved to her and called out to her, "Goodbye, mother." And as he stepped up to the checkout counter with his three items, he saw that his total was $147.50. "How can that be?" he asked. "I only purchased a few things." The cashier said, "Your mother said that you would pay for her." Now that's a gotcha. I mean, it's no fun to be duped. It was no laughing matter many years ago when church-going folks were defrauded of $450 million in a four-year period by scam artists who posed as church members. They spoke the Christian language and they played the part of any real believer, but they cheated many believers out of their life savings through phony investment scams and pyramid schemes. All the things Christians have fallen for over the years. I remember as a pastor in Portland, Maine, having to deal with a deceiver in the church who was winning people over with his charm and charisma, but was defrauding one person at a time and moving throughout the churches in Portland. He became very divisive. But he was so good at playing the part that even when discipline action had to be taken on him, some Christians didn't understand why we would do that. I mean, he means well, they would say. No, he was a con artist preying upon the feelings of trust in the Christian community. And likewise, it's no laughing matter when susceptible saints are duped into swallowing lies, thinking it is true. I mean, how many well-intentioned saints have gone off the rails of biblical truth in the name of tolerance and relevance and rationalism and a feel-good Christianity? And why is it that we are discerning about things that are important to us in our daily lives, yet not use the same skills and careful practices in matters of truth and spirituality? As it's been said, a lie can travel halfway around the world while truth is putting on its shoes. We need men and women today, and teenagers and 20 and 30-year-olds right up through seniors, with courage to stand up for the truth and be discerning. See, there's no virtue in being gullible. Now, that's not to say no one can ever be believed or trusted, and you should be this great cynic and suspicious of every story told. I'm not saying go that far over. It's just at times we are such a gullible bunch, are we not? I mean, there is a fine line, and you have to figure where that is, between giving people the benefit of the doubt and being overly trusting and naive. See, the problem isn't just that we're so trusting. The problem is, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to look at the passage of Scripture of a true story of people being duped. You'll find it in Joshua chapter 9, and if you're not there already, I would encourage you to turn in your Bibles to the book of Joshua. And we're going to be looking at Joshua chapter 9. It's an Old Testament book with a great message for us because it comes from God's mouth. Now we continue in our sermon series on being strong and courageous. There are so many life lessons for us from this Old Testament book of Joshua. Now, I've organized, as I've said, the series around be statements, be statements, such as be faithful, be unified, be yielded, be diligent. And if you were here last week or you were able to check out the sermon online, you'll recall where we left off. It's kind of important to know that. Because after suffering a major defeat, God wrote another chapter in the lives of his people. They went from failure to victory. And the word to us from last week was we can always be hopeful because failure is not final. We can begin again. And for the people of Israel, it was a dramatic and positive time for them as a nation, as we left off last week. Now, I don't know about you, but it's coming off of a victory or a high point or a time of success that I must be ever so careful not to let my guard down. Perhaps it's on the heels of victory that we are most vulnerable to deception. Now, whether that's true or not, Joshua chapter 9 is very instructive for us in this matter of not being deceived. And I believe we find in this chapter, Joshua chapter 9, three stages of deception. And by extension, they're stages that deception is going to pass through if it's going to be successful in our lives. And we need to be aware of them so we can guard against being duped. So there's three stages here. They're not profound. They're really rather simple and straightforward, and I think rather obvious stages of deception. The first stage is the convincing offer is made. The convincing offer is made. Following the victories at Jericho and then Ai, there was a buzz in the air. In Joshua chapter 9, verse 1, look with me, verse 1 of chapter 9. It says, "Now when all the kings west of the Jordan heard about these things." Well, what things? Well, they heard about Israel's success in taking possession of the land. And then verse 1 continues with a preview, really, of what is to come for Israel. And those two verses, verses 1 and 2, give us a list of several city-states in the mountainous regions who aren't going to stand around and do nothing about the Israelites' invasion of the land. They're going to do something about it. And so the city-states and these mountainous regions form a confederacy. And they're of one accord in fighting Israel and fighting Joshua. That's what's happening in verses 1 and 2. Now, verse 3 tells us that there was a section of the Hittites called the Gibeonites who they really occupied four small cities who weren't so convinced that they could win this battle against Israel with Yahweh God fighting for them. And so these Gibeonites, these Hittites, they became concerned. They didn't want to join this confederacy. They were desperate. They didn't want to fight, but they didn't want to get wiped out either. So they did what many people do when caught in a jam. They make up a story. They lie. A Sunday school teacher asked her class, "Children, what is a lie?" One young boy shot up his hand and answered, "A lie is an abomination to the Lord." The teacher was quite pleased until the boy continued and added, "And a very present help in time of trouble." It's not true. See, in general, people find it easier to tell lies than the truth and even justify it when in a jam. And we've kind of grown accustomed to lying in our culture, in our world. And in the business world, lying is so commonplace that we begin to accept it as just a part of life. That's what you do. A man joked, "I just bought a two-story house. I just bought a two-story house. The realtor told me one story before I bought it and another story after I bought it." Right? We just get used to it. That's what happens. That's okay. It's part of life. That's what you have to do to make a buck. Well, the Gibeonites make up a story. I mean, and it's a good story. Very convincing. See, they would rather lose their integrity than lose their lives. And verse 4 informs us of their ploy. Look at verse 4. It says, "They went as a delegation whose donkeys were loaded with worn-out sacks and old wineskins cracked and mended. The men put worn and patched sandals on their feet and wore old clothes. All the bread of their food supply was dry and moldy. Then they went to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal and said to him and the men of Israel, "We have come from a distant country. Make a treaty with us." Now, they spare no effort in trying to trick Joshua. They put on these tattered clothes and these worn-out sandals. They found some old wineskins, and they packed a lunch of dry and moldy bread. And they traveled really only a short distance, maybe 6 or 10 or 13 miles at the most. But what they were doing is they wanted to give the impression that they had traveled for hundreds of miles. And it's quite convincing. That is, if the leaders fall for the appearances and trust in their own wisdom. And the reports, what they say here is also very convincing. It's quite thought out. Down in verse 9 and going on to verse 10, you'll notice that they mention that they heard about Israel's victories. And they speak of these victories on the other side of the Jordan back in Egypt and on the east side. They speak of those victories that happened long ago and not the most recent victories of Jericho and Ai, because if they spoke of the recent victories, that would have been a giveaway. See, because coming from a distant land, they would not have heard of those two conquests. And so they mention the battles won on the east side of the Jordan that happened some time ago, because we've been traveling during that time. Those are the only ones we know about. See, their reasoning was that since they were not neighbors, they would pose no threat to the Israelites. That's their angle. And perhaps they're even aware of the provision in the Mosaic law permitting Israel to extend peace with cities that were a considerable distance. You'll find that in Deuteronomy 20. Perhaps they knew that. I think that's giving them too much credit, to be honest with you. We don't really know. It doesn't tell us. But one thing is for sure, they pretended to be something they were not. Are you doing that? Have you done that? Have you been on the receiving end of that? They're pretending to be something they were not. And this was an Oscar performance by the Gibeonites. I can't help but think of the movie Catch Me If You Can. It was a true story based on the life of Frank Abagnale Jr., who deceived the government out of more than $5 million by the time he was 21 years old. He passed himself off as an airline pilot, though he had no pilot's license. He passed himself off as a medical doctor and a practicing attorney. And while posing as a doctor on one scene, Frank meets a young nurse, Brenda, and he falls in love. And when he goes and meets her father, who's a prestigious lawyer, he scores points with him by pretending, operative word, by pretending to be a graduate of the same law school the father attended. And because Frank looks 10 years older than he really is, Brenda's father hires him as an associate in his law firm. Knowing they are Lutherans, he also claims to be Lutheran. In one scene, the FBI is closing in on catching him before he escapes once again. And he confesses to Brenda. He says, "You know, Brenda, I don't want to lie to you anymore. I'm not a doctor. I've never been to medical school. I'm not a lawyer or a Harvard graduate. I'm not even a Lutheran. I ran away from home a year and a half ago when I was 16. With a straight face, Brenda says, Frank, you're not a Lutheran? That's all she cared about. She has a lot more problems on her hands than that. But see, when it came to dealing with Frank Abagnale Jr., things weren't always as they seemed to be. And that's the case here with these Gibeonites. Listen, mark this down. Deception comes in convincing fashion. It comes in convincing fashion. Always. I mean, the deception is not going to tell you of painful consequences to come. Deception is not going to have the word counterfeit written on the outside. It will be convincing. You'll have on the clothes of authenticity, you'll have some resemblance to the real thing. Is there an offer in front of you right now that's being presented to you that looks quite convincing? Is it asking you to make this slight moral compromise and you're starting to flirt with it because you're starting to be convinced to go along with it? She said, I can fudge a little bit here. Not a big deal. I'm going to do that. Listen, you make a small commitment to it now, it is easier to make a larger commitment to it later. You make a small commitment to it now, whatever that is in front of you, that little compromise that you say is no big deal, it is easier to make a larger commitment to it later. I mean, is there something that you're doing today that you once said you'd never do? That might be a flag. Don't let any deception, any lie, any compromise get its foot in the door. Convincing offer is made. Are you at stage one? Because after the convincing offer is made, it's going to be effective. If it's going to be effective, it's going to lead to the second stage, and that's the offer is now under consideration. Not only presented to you, it's now under consideration. You see, you know you're in trouble when you start conversing with the enemy. Verse 7 says, the men of Israel said to the Hivites, which are the Gibeonites, but perhaps you live near us. I mean, how then can we make a treaty with you? You kind of get the impression right here that Joshua and the leaders, they're not really buying this story. It's obvious the leaders had their suspicions. They asked good questions here. See, the problem wasn't that they didn't think. The problem was, well, let's just go down here. We see Joshua, he presses some more when he asks in verse 8, who are you and where do you come from? They answered, verse 9, your servants have come from a very distant country because of the fame of the Lord your God, for we have heard reports of him, all that he did in Egypt. Now, by the way, there are parallels here to the story of Rahab. Both lied. Both seem to have a high view of Yahweh God. But perhaps the Gibeonites have been God-fearing, our God-fearing, as Rahab was. Perhaps. I'm not sure about that. Unless I miss my guess, I think they're just giving lip service to it all and saying what they know the Israelites wanted to hear. Ever done that? In the classroom setting of a Peanuts comic strip on the first day of the new school year, the students were told to write an essay about returning to school. And in her essay, Lucy wrote, vacations are nice, but it's good to get back to school. There's nothing more satisfying or challenging than education, and I look forward to a year of expanding knowledge. Needless to say, the teacher was pleased with Lucy and complimented her fine essay. Well, in the final frame of this comic strip, Lucy leans over and whispers to Charlie Brown, after a while, you learn what sells. True. See, the temptation to say what others want to hear is a present reality. Why Joshua and the leaders would even consider this offer is because the Gibeonites are saying what sells. And what adds strength to deception is that it's mixed with some truth. You know the saying, right? Error is the most dangerous that contains some truth in it. Watch out for that kind. The Gibeonite story was so reasonable. Their language was reverential. Their appearance was in keeping with what they said. I mean, who could dispute the obvious? Look with me at verse 12. This is obvious. The bread of ours was warm, they say, when we packed it at home on the day we left to come to you. But now see how dry and moldy it is. And these wineskins that we filled were new, but see how cracked they are. And our clothes and sandals, they're worn out by the very long journey. See, they had the look of reality and the smell of authenticity. See, the problem here wasn't that the Gibeonites were convincing. The problem was, well, let me give you the two stages again. Stage one, a convincing offer is made. I want to make sure you're with me. In stage two, the offer is now under consideration. Now, there's a word for those who try to reason with temptation. It's the word victim. And that brings us to the third stage in deception, really the most tragic of them all. Not only a convincing offer is presented to them, that offer is now under consideration. They're thinking about it. They're dialoguing with them. The offer is checked out, but God's left out. The offer is checked out and God is left out. The leadership here are dangerously close to buying the story hook, line, and sinker, or as we would some would say, lock, stock, and barrel. Look at verse 14. Verse 14 says, the men of Israel sampled their provisions. Now, I'm not sure why they wanted to sample moldy bread, but kind of like when we pull some sour milk out of the fridge and we go, hey, taste it, right? It's kind of the same thing. I'm thinking sour. You want to try it? Why would we? See, the problem here wasn't that they sampled the food. The problem was what we read next. We come to some very sad words there in the end of verse 14. What does it say? But they did not inquire of the Lord. They checked the credibility of the evidence by sampling it, but they did not consult the Lord. Now, I want to give you the literal translation of verse 14. I find it quite interesting, I think a little more impactful. Listen to how it reads in the literal sense, verse 14. The men of Israel received the men by reason of the food, but the mouth of God they did not ask. The men of Israel received the men by reason of the food, but the mouth of God they did not ask. Now, the force of that suggests that Joshua and the leaders relied more on their own reason than on the wisdom of God. They reasoned, it all made sense. But God is left out. See, there's no reading between the lines here as to what went wrong. We don't have to guess. It tells us. Joshua and the leaders checked out the bread, but they didn't check with God. This is the reason they fell for this scam. They did not inquire of the Lord. Everything seemed to check out because Joshua was looking at the situation from a human perspective only. And from a human perspective, there was solid evidence. And from a human perspective, they asked the right questions. They had their suspicions. The problem wasn't that they were sloppy in their investigation. The problem was they didn't check with God. And right here, this is when leadership fails. This is when God's people fail, right here, verse 14. This is when marriages fail. This is when business ventures and partners and romances and ministry leaders and churches fail, right here. Why did Joshua and the leaders fail? We just answered it. They did not check with God. The mouth of God they did not ask. But I ask the question, why? Why? What's going on here? See, the real question behind this is, why is it that they did not seek the counsel of the Lord? Why didn't they? Now, church, I believe there's a pearl of wisdom for us right here. I want us to see the why behind their not consulting with the Lord. Because this is what it all comes down to, I believe, for us today. We are just too smart for our own good sometimes. We see some issue before us, and it seems so obvious that we move ahead without consulting the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 7, I often refer to this as, I kind of feel bad for this verse, because it gets left out, because we know Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Many of you could quote it verbatim. What about verse 7? Feel bad for that verse. This is what it says. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. Do not be wise in your own eyes. I take that to mean don't be too smart for your own good. And you say, oh, but Pastor, the decision looks so obvious. The evidence is clear. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Find out what God says about it. Take time to consult the Lord. Check with Him. And just think about the heartache we experience because we don't take every decision to the Lord, but instead we rely on our reason and our own judgment. And so on a day-to-day basis, we just kind of rely on that rather than seek God and the matters that are in front of us. Now listen, I'm not talking about whether we should eat cornflakes or Wheaties for breakfast. Don't get ridiculous. No, why white socks or blue socks? We're not talking about that. But do we go to God with matters that are in front of us during the day? Do we check with Him? Do we want to know what He thinks? Do we ask for His direction? Because His direction is available, but often ignored. A ranger at Yellowstone National Park was leading a group of hikers to a fire lookout, and the ranger was so intent on telling the hikers about the beautiful flowers and the wild animals that he considered the messages on his two-way radio distracting, so he turned his two-way radio off. The authorities were trying to get a hold of the ranger, but they could not reach him because he turned off his two-way radio. Well, nearing the tower, the ranger was met by a nearly breathless lookout who wanted to know why the ranger hadn't responded to the messages on his radio. And he said, "I turned it off." But they desperately needed to get a hold of him. Why? Well, come to find out, a grizzly bear had been stalking the group, and the authorities were trying to warn these group of hikers of danger. They almost became the bear's lunch, all because the ranger found the two-way radio to be a distraction. You show me someone who's in danger of being overtaken by deception, and I'll show you someone who has turned off communication with the living God. You show me someone who's in danger of being overtaken by deception, and I'll show you someone who's turned off communication with the living Lord. Your future and mine are determined by one thing: seeking after the Lord. We stop feeling the need to seek Him, we are set up to be duped. Are you sampling the food, yet not seeking Him? Are you in danger of trusting your own judgments, leaving God out? In what way are you just too smart for your own good? See, the famous last words when it comes to being deceived are four words. Famous last words when it comes to being deceived, four words. I can handle it. I can handle it. I can handle this relationship right here with an unbeliever. I can handle it. I can handle this temptation. I got it. I can handle this. I can handle this decision. I can handle it. Fill in the blank. On my own, I have this. Tragic words that don't end well. And it doesn't end well for Joshua and his leadership team. They make a treaty of peace with the Gibeonites, which is a direct violation of God's word. You can check it out for yourself in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 2. But God's instructions to the Israelites concerning the people in Canaan and the land that they were given is that they were to wipe them all out and not make a treaty of peace with any of them. And 3 days following this decision to make a treaty of peace with the Gibeonites, Joshua and his men learned that they were duped. Do you know what it feels like to be fooled? I mean, have you been on the receiving end of someone tricking you? It doesn't feel so good. Well, you can imagine how Joshua and his men must have felt here. And to make matters worse, they were the leaders. The leaders who were riding this wake of success had a major lapse in judgment, and they let down the people, and they failed their gods. Now, to their credit, and you're going to have to read on for yourself the rest of this year. It's very interesting. I encourage you to do that. To their credit, they knew what to do after they failed. Just for a second, just look at me at verse 15. Because the people there of Israel, they're grumbling now. They're saying, "We can't have them here. We need to wipe them out." Well, the leaders answered those grumblers by saying, verse 19, no, "We've given them our oath by the Lord, the God of Israel, and we cannot touch them now." They're saying we will not sin again by breaking this oath. Regardless of the consequences, they're saying, no, we can't break our vow. We can't. Now, Psalm 15, verse 4, it says of a man who walks in integrity. Know what it says about a man who walks in integrity? That he keeps his oath even when it hurts. How are we doing there? I mean, it hurts right here. You see, you cannot undo the past, but you can make good decisions now. Just because you didn't check with God back there somewhere doesn't mean you have to continue to shut him off. Return to principle after failure. Now, they didn't have to be in this predicament. Do we take them out? Do we not? What do we do now? They didn't have to be in that. This should have never have happened. It all happened because they did not check with God. All because they became too smart for their own good. They reasoned that it all made sense, but never checked in with God, and they did not detect deception. It's been said this way. We need not only the power of God to overwhelm our obvious enemies, but also the wisdom of God to detect our subtle enemies. Unfortunately, the church too often craves God's power while it ignores God's wisdom. I found that convicting. Because if asked, which would I rather have, God's power or God's wisdom, which is not really, neither or, but if we ask that, we'd say, God's power. No, like Solomon, we should say, how about wisdom? Church too often craves God's power while it ignores God's wisdom. I mean, how can we dispute the obvious except with divine insight? Church, EBC, be discerning. Be discerning. Don't believe everything you hear or read on Facebook. Don't. Check things out. And I'm speaking especially to those claims that seem spiritually convincing. Be discerning. Are you growing in discernment? Are you practicing discernment skills like careful thought and biblical thinking and close observation and application of his word to your life daily? I mean, what is it that might be dangling in front of you right now that has the potential to take you away from the one that you love? What area in your life can you ill afford right now to let down your guard? What are you allowing lately to make its way into your thinking? Maybe it's a lie you've swallowed or you're about to swallow. How close are you to being duped? Convincing offer is made. The offer is under consideration. The offer is checked out, but God is left out. Where are you in that? Do you see yourself in any of those stages? I don't know. Maybe it's the person you're thinking about dating. Maybe it's the person you consider marrying. Or maybe some leaders chosen, or maybe a partnership in that business venture. I don't know what it is for you. But you're starting to take it under consideration, you're leaving God out and say, I can handle this one. I want to leave you with three thoughts to take with you around being discerning. You can call them action points, whatever you want. They're not really steps because you need all three of these. And you need more than these. I'm just going to give you three because you really want to get home at some point. Three thoughts. First one, when under pressure, here's the first one. If you want to grow in discernment and be discerning, when under pressure, wait. Can we just do that? When under pressure, wait. They didn't. Especially when under pressure to make a decision, wait. Sit on it. Give yourself time to seek the Lord. When under pressure, wait. Kind of basic. Two, another basic one. Ask God for wisdom. It just rolls off our lips. Ask God, yeah, I'm supposed to ask God for wisdom. James chapter 1 tells us that if we lack wisdom, and we all do, more times we feel that more than others, but we all lack wisdom. If we lack wisdom, what should we do? Ask God for it. And when we ask God for it, he doesn't really like to give it to us. No, James 1 says he loves to give it to us. He wants it. He's just waiting for you to ask for it. And yet we're tempted to rely often on our own reason than on the wisdom of God. When under pressure, wait. Ask God for wisdom. Lastly, I'd say probably most importantly, immerse yourself in biblical truth. You cannot detect deception any other way. You cannot gain discernment overnight. You cannot gain discernment through some mystical experience. Discernment comes as we grow and develop a biblically informed mind. I cannot stress that enough. Remember verse 14, taken literally. It says, the men of Israel received the men by reason of the food, but the mouth of God they did not ask. What has come to us from the mouth of God? His written word. God's word says that man cannot live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. Is this your daily bread? I need it. You need it. Are you growing and developing in a biblically informed mind? If you're not, you're going to be duped. No other way to say it. You're going to be duped. You're going to fall for things we should never fall for. Because there are deceivers and there are schemers all around us. How's your deception detector? How's your deception detector? There was a well-known comedian, evangelist, and professed ex-Satanist who was known in his day as America's number one Christian comedian. He sold in excess of 1 million records in the 80s. Now, I know for some of you, that seems like it's in your history books. I lived in the 80s. But his book, The Satan Seller, it sold 3 million copies in 20 years. He had appearances on 700 Club, The Oprah Winfrey Show, Larry King Live, Focus on the Family, and ABC's 2020. Law enforcement used this guy to help train others about the occult. His story is an amazing story of a young orphan boy. He was raised in foster homes. He drifted from his family and friends, and he joined the secret, all-powerful satanic cult. He was in deep of drug addiction. He ascended in the satanic ranks to the position of high priest with 1,500 followers in three cities. He had unlimited wealth and power at his disposal, provided by members of Satanism's highest echelon, the Illuminati. Then he came to Christ. His life changed. He was gifted as a spellbinder orator. I mean, he could make people laugh. I sat in one of his concerts. He made me laugh. His testimony was absolutely riveting. He enraptured audiences with his biographical story. And he would move from his own story to presenting the gospel by saying something like this: if Christ can save me from the depths of committed satanic worship, then for heaven's sake, Christ can save you. I mean, pretty powerful stuff, right? I mean, it was an incredible story. The only problem was, it was all made up. The only truth was that Mike Warnke was a great storyteller. He lied a lot. It was a good story, a very convincing story, and many, many people fell for it. Now, we may not be able to detect deception every time in that first pass, but neither should we be so undiscerning. Neither should there be so many undiscerning believers that we see in the contemporary church today. EBC, do you know the truth? Are you a lover of truth? These ancient words from ancient story are written for us today. Let's be strong and courageous and standing for the truth.